Lori Houston's News for the Heart is dedicated to helping you give a voice to your own soul. Our hearts have the power to free us from pain and the struggles that keep us from awakening to our true essence. Join Lori now as we delve into our heart and soul to find the path that will open us to the possibilities and lead us to the life we love to live.
And good afternoon. This is News for the Heart, and this is our New Year's show with Tom Campbell. We are going to talk about, we're going to talk about New Year's intentions instead of resolutions, because I know that as a new year comes, we always want to set resolutions, and resolutions tend to be about doing. So we want to get you, shift your focus to intentions. We'll look at the same types of resolutions, maybe look at how we can switch them over to an intention, maybe look at how we can, discover that that fear that might be there that is sort of blocking you. I don't know. But welcome to the show, Tom.
Thank you, Lori. It's always a pleasure to be here with you.
Always great.
And here we are the day after Christmas.
Yeah, I know. So we are all good to go. And I hear you're going to be off for a little while. So
yeah, I'm going to be in England and then France for starting somewhere around the end of last week in February. I'm going to be gone and won't get back until the end of March. So I'll be there about a month.
So not the next one then. That means the one for March and possibly April, but the January one should be fine then.
Yes.
Okay, good. Because that's the love month. We want to make sure we get that one in.
I'll have to look at my schedule. Yeah, there's a couple of them I don't remember now, but we need to reschedule a little.
Okay. So let's talk about New Year's intentions versus resolutions.
Okay. Well, first, I think it would be worthwhile just talking a little bit about what you mean there as the difference between the intention and the resolution. I think what you're meaning is that there's a difference between you said between being and the doing.
Often when we look at resolutions, we're setting goals that are outside of ourselves, that are, you know, things we want to change or fix or heal. You know, they tend to be, what can I do different?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's, you know, that's a good thing to do. It is good to do those things differently, but one needs to keep in mind that it's not the doing that is really so important.
Right.
And that goes on both ends. It's not only the things that you do that really aren't that important, or the things that other people do that affect you. What's really important is why you do them and how you deal with the things that come to you. That's what's really important. So rather than doing things better, it would be a nice change to think about, how could I be better?
Right.
It's not just that I'm going to manipulate the world in a better way, you know, and I'm going to make sure that I take advantage of this and don't do that and avoid this kind of trouble and get these things. That may make your life seem a little better, but if you don't really change who you are, then you're still going to be living that same life more or less. The circumstances may change a little, but your life and its quality won't change much. Now, if your life is just full of joy and happiness and, you know, you're satisfied and everything is good, then okay, you don't have a whole lot to work on. But that does not describe most people most of the time. You know, most of us are not full of joy and happiness most of the time. Mostly we're full of struggle and angst and pressure and anxiety and stress. That's what we're full of. And all of those things won't change no matter how clever you are about doing just the right things, because it's not about doing. You can't act your way through your life. You just have to live it. And when you just live it, you eventually will get right back to the core being who you are. And if that core being is struggling and full of, you know, stress and anxiety, then that won't change even if the circumstances change. Even if you win the lottery and suddenly become a multimillionaire, if you don't change who you are, your life will still be full of stress and angst and problems and difficulties. It's just the problems and difficulties will all change. Right. Instead of where am I going to get money for the next meal and how am I going to pay the rent, it'll be other things. Mm. But the general quality of your life isn't going to change much unless you change who you are. So focusing on becoming authentic, figuring out who you really are and being that. And if that doesn't seem to work for you, then how you might change that, not act differently, but actually be differently. That would be a good intention for the new year, to start out a new year. This year, I'm just going to be who I am, the way I am, and see how that works. How does that interact with people? Does that cause more joy in my surroundings and in my life, or does that cause more stress? And if it causes more stress and problems in your life, then you have to think about changing who you are, being differently. And it's a long process, but eventually you will get to the point where your life is mainly joy and happiness and satisfaction, and you have very low stress. You get rid of all those buttons that people can push. You get rid of all those big wants and needs and things that you have to have this way or that way for you to be happy, and all of that disappears, and you just end up happy. Even though everybody else is just the way they were, you're still happy, and then those other people that are around you start to change as well. Well, because this is something that's contagious. It tends to affect other people, and they get to be a little happier too.
Right. And how do you think that, like, how do we do that? Like, what do we need? What do we need to do? What
It's a trap, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah. How do we go about doing this?
Yeah.
When it's not about doing.
Exactly.
Well, exactly. First thing is you need to have the desire, the will. You need to really want to do it, because it's not an easy thing to do. You have to really put some effort into being authentic. You have to put some effort into being more concerned with how you respond to other people and other things, not so much into trying to manipulate them to be the way you want. And we tend to just continue the way we are. You know, if we don't try hard, we just keep on keeping on the way we are, and nothing ever changes, and our life seems to be this unending struggle.
Right.
So if we want to change that unending struggle, then we have to change something. And the only thing we can change is ourselves. So we start there. So the first thing is you have to really want to do the work to find happiness. Now, happiness isn't a goal that you get to. Happiness is just what happens to you when you're living your life in the right way, when you have the right attitude toward things, when you are seeing bigger pictures and not lost in little pictures. Then happiness just happens. So it's not, happiness isn't something you go out and like find, you know, and trap it and make it stay around you. It doesn't work that way. And happiness is not that you are a successful manipulator and can finally get everybody to do just what you want them to do. That won't make you happy either. That would sort of be the soft side of winning the lottery. You know, if you became a master manipulator, you'd think, oh, if I could just get, you know, my spouse and my children and my boss and, you know, people where I work and everybody to just be and do the way I want them to, life would be great. But it wouldn't. It wouldn't be great at all. You know, look at the people who actually had that. Who were they? They would have been the people in charge, the kings, the queens, right? The royalty. They had everybody being exactly the way they wanted them to be. They had this almost infinite power to manipulate, because whatever they said became the law. And if we read about these people in history, we will not find them a bunch of happy people who were full of joy and peace. We will find them to be a bunch of, you know, people who are always on the edge, always struggling, always fighting, always unhappy, always in the middle of a drama of some sort. And that's the kind of life you live if you are a master manipulator. And if you're just a so-so manipulator, like most of us, we get the same result. You know, it's another soap opera life, you know, full of struggle and stress. And, it's better to realize that the reason you have that struggle and stress is because you're trying to manipulate things. And so is most everybody else. And it just doesn't ever work out. Better to just accept things and deal with them with, you know, by being gracious, by, you know, with love, with caring, and just let people be however they are. Deal with the things you have to deal with, and don't deal with them, you know, gritting your teeth. Deal with them and you're okay with it, whatever it is. So it's just changing your own attitude, the way you define things, can fix your life. Now that sounds simple. Oh, all you have to do is change your attitude. But changing an attitude can be a very difficult thing. And like I say, if you're not really committed to doing that,
right,
you probably won't because it's, excuse me, because it's hard work,
right,
to do that. And the way you go about it first is you just have to think about, who am I? Really, who am I if I'm just authentic? And if that isn't a very pretty picture, then you have to change yourself. If that is a pretty picture, then go be it. Just be it. You know, live honestly. Tell people what you think. Now, that doesn't mean be rude.
Right.
It just means be straightforward. Be honest. Yes, you should still be caring. Doesn't mean when I say tell people what you think, you know, that is not a license to be rude, you know, and tell people off. That's what you think. You know, I really never did like that person. Now I'll tell them. No, it's probably not helpful to tell them. You see, it'd be more helpful to be kind to them instead. And maybe the whole relationship would get a little better. So the being yourself isn't a license to be more and more self-centered. It's a license to be honest with yourself. And when you see that person you don't like, you need to think, well, why not? What's the problem there? And the problem isn't them. You can't point to them and say, well, they're the problem. That's not the case. It takes two to make a relationship. And you can fix your part of it and let them do whatever they do. And if your part's fixed, then there isn't anything that they can do to really upset you or bother you, because you accept it as they are and you accept them as they are. They don't have to be the way you want them. They're living their own life. They're in their own soap opera, struggling. And there's really not too much you can do about that other than be caring and compassionate about them. But once you have that attitude, then you don't have buttons that they can push anymore. And then it's not an argument. And even if they're rude to you, you can just kind of smile and give them a hug and say, that's okay. You know, and not let any of that bother you. Now, I'm not talking about acting. I'm talking that you have to be this way. And the way you be this way is you catch yourself not being this way. You catch yourself being upset. You catch yourself being stressed. You catch yourself saying, oh, I wish they wouldn't do that. Oh, that's awful the way, you know, that person's working. I wish my children wouldn't, you know, see these people. And you have these things you want. And you then have to deal with that in the most positive way possible rather than just wanting to reach out and force it to be the way you want it and change it. Accept it. You're not in charge.
Right.
You know, you cannot run the world. Now, the only people other than yourself you may be in charge of would be very small children. Yes, if you have toddlers, you are in charge. You do get to make their decisions for them, but then they're generally not the ones that stress you. The children that stress you are usually somewhere between 13 and 18. Those are the ones that stress you. And you cannot run their life anymore.
No.
You have to let them be who they are. You have to let them also be authentic. You have to give them guidance, but you have to not give them orders. At that age, they need to make their own decisions. And you need to be there to catch them when they make bad ones. Not to prohibit them from making bad ones. You know, you need to just be there and give them guidance, point out the possibilities, the upsides and the downsides of their choices, and then let them make choices. But if you are not judgmental, If you talk with them without being judgmental, they will actually come and seek your advice, seek your choices. They don't mind getting your help. They just can't stand you telling them what to do because they're at that awkward age of having to become their own person. And when you tell them what to do, you're jumping in their game of growing up and making their own choices. But if you're non-judgmental, they will come and seek you out and tell you about their hard choices and listen to you. But if you're judgmental, they'll never tell you a word because they don't want your judgment. You see, and if they can't get your advice without your judgment, then they'll get nothing. They just won't let you know what's going on. And, you know, until one day you get a call from the police and find out that you're going to have to go down and, you know, bail your little one out of jail or something. Then's when you find out about it. Well, that's not a good time to find out about it. So, don't be judgmental. So, yeah, there's a few people that we can control other than ourselves, but they're mostly all under 10. Yeah. We're all under 12, that sort of thing. And then between the 10 and 12 and 13, we slowly have to let go and let go a little bit more and a little bit more, you know, every year to where they are making their own choices. And if we are manipulating things, we need to do it in the background so that it doesn't show. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, parents do that all the time. They move to a better neighborhood. Well, that's a manipulation, but it doesn't show. You see, it's not like the children feel like they're being manipulated there. So you can do things like that, but you have to lead from the rear, not from the front. You can't say, do as I say. You need to give them all the guidance that they can use and let them do as they will, and then help them if it hurts them, help them if they cry, and if it's a problem, and don't judge them and say, I told you so. You just need to pick them up and help them see a better picture, pat them on the rump, and send them back out into the game. You know, that's life. And it's better they learn from their mistakes when they're young, because the price to pay when they're young is usually not that stiff. But once you're older, once you're an adult, you make similar kinds of mistakes, and the price is a lot higher. It's a lot less forgiving to adults than it is for children. Our world is pretty forgiving of children, but not forgiving at all of adults. So, you know, let them learn their lessons when they're young. Well, I don't know how talking about New Year's Eve revolution got off on rearing children, but anyway.
Well, but that is often something that, you know, that parents will put as a New Year's resolution. But so let's talk about some of the ones so that we can get, I guess, an idea. Now, This year, I've looked a lot at sugar, and I mean, it is so damaging, and it's such a, it really is a drug. How do you, I mean, I can have the willpower at certain times for very long periods of time. I don't know, you know, when I think of saying, okay, I'm never going to have sugar again, then I think, oh, but what about, you know, that one day that's really, really hot and I really, really, really want some ice cream? Or, you know, like, how do you make that decision? And, you know, I mean, obviously this is the problem with resolutions, because usually once you make a resolution, you know, you tend to need to follow it really, really closely. And then once you fall off, well, then that gives your ego an opportunity to say, oh, well, you couldn't stick to it, so let's just go crazy. And that's often what happens, and we sort of lose track. I mean, there obviously is a fear attached to why someone emotionally eats, or, you know, obviously there's consciousness that needs to be brought into each situation that we want to change. And, you know, this, it's always at the beginning of the year that we sort of look at those things that we don't like about ourselves. And, you know, we try to come up with, you know, with ways to change our behaviors.
Yes. I think the biggest thing is that you have to really want to change your behavior. Right. If you're trying to change your behavior because you think you should, well, I should stop smoking. I should lose weight. I should not eat sugar because you've read and you've studied and you've got some information that says these things aren't really very healthy, good things to be doing. So you think you should stop them. Well, that's a very weak intent.
Right.
See, I think I should. That's an intellectual intent. Your intellect has gathered information and says these aren't good things to do. And therefore your intellect thinks it would be a good idea to stop. Well, you don't change yourself because you wish it at the intellectual level. That doesn't work. You have to really want to change at the being level. You have to really want to change at a deep level. And it's not so much, oh, I should quit smoking, as it is, I don't want to be a drug addict. I don't want to be a drug addict. I won't be a drug addict. And if you look at it that way, now it's not just that you're doing something you think you should. You're doing something you really want to do. You don't want to be a drug addict.
Right.
Being a drug addict costs money. Being a drug addict annoys the people around you because your behavior changes in ways that's generally not pleasant. If you're a smoker, a lot of people don't like smoke. A lot of people are not only annoyed by it, but they're allergic to it. And it smells bad, and your clothes and your hair smell bad. And, you know, you generally, you know, just kind of smell bad all the time. If you smoke, your teeth get yellow. You know, your breath smells bad, too. And you're just not as good. But that's the way it is with drug addicts. Drug addicts generally end up with characteristics, be it their odor or you know, the way they act or think, that are not very pleasant or not very good for other people. If you're an alcoholic, then you tend to act in ways that you're just not that pleasant to be around. People don't want to sit around with you while you're drunk and raving or silly or angry or whatever it is you get when you get drunk. It gets to be pretty tiresome for other people. So it's not a good thing. And it's the same with all the addictive drugs. What does sugar do? Well, it does a couple of things. It makes your mind fuzzy to where you don't think nearly as clearly as you would otherwise. And it also, if you eat sugar, then probably your children are going to be eating sugar. And for children who are smaller, the amount of sugar they eat against, compared to their body weight, they're getting a lot more of that drug than you are for the most part if you're an adult. And children, it drives them nuts. It makes them hyper. It gets them excited. It winds them up, and they get frantic. If you watch a bunch of children right after they've, you know, been to a birthday party or something, they've eaten a lot of sugar, they're just wired. And if you get inside their mind and see, what are they feeling? What are they like? Well, they're just like anybody who takes too many uppers or somebody who drinks 15 cups of coffee. You know, they're just wired. They no longer can think. They no longer, you know, can connect. They're not connected to other people. They're not aware of their behavior. It puts them into a mental space that's just dysfunctional. So it does the same thing to adults, but adults can handle it better because they're bigger, so the drug dosage isn't as high, and because they've gotten used to it. Just like most any addict, you know, the first time you smoke a cigarette, it makes you dizzy. But after you smoked a couple of packs of them, that goes away. You start to get used to the drug. But then you always need more and more. You know, so now you end up smoking a pack a day and then two packs a day because you need more and more of the drug because you get used to it. Well, adults have probably been sugar addicts since they were, you know, 1 year old or less. So they've gotten used to it. Young ones haven't done that yet, so it makes them a little crazier than it would an adult. But it's just another addictive drug that clouds your mind and
can lead to diabetes and
modifies your judgment. Yeah. Modifies, you know, even adults, it modifies your judgment. You know, when you have a lot of sugar in your system, you're going to be more likely to have bad judgment, to do things and say things that you wouldn't otherwise. You don't consider things as well. Yes, you're just like those kids. You just don't show it as much. You don't run around in circles screaming like they do, but it does affect you just the same. And of all of those drugs we've just talked about, sugar's probably the hardest one to let go of, yeah, with the most serious and the longest withdrawals. Mm-hmm. People can be off sugar for, you know, 6 months, 8 months, a year, and still, you know, have a lot of cravings for it. But if you really want to let go of it, those withdrawals will be much, much smaller and much less time. That's the key. And if you do it because you think you should, and you look at those donuts and you go, oh, I'd really love to have one, but that wouldn't be good for me, so I won't. Your withdrawal will go on for years, right, if you have that attitude. If it's you, your intellect, trying to convince yourself that you don't want to do it, you probably won't succeed. And even if you succeed, your withdrawals will go on and on and on and on. Mm-hmm. If you just say, I don't want to do that anymore. I want to be clear-headed. I don't want to be addicted. And I don't want to be part of a pattern of addiction with the people around me. Because if you're eating sugar, you bring it into your house. You know, you serve it on the table. It's around. And all the people around you are more likely exposed to that particular addictive drug. So all of the drugs, you know, the typical ones, I guess sugar is probably the most prevalent because almost everybody in our society is addicted to sugar from at least, you know, when you're 1 year old, somebody puts a cupcake full of icing, you know, on their high chair tray. And most of the little ones actually don't like it at first. And they get their first taste of sugar. It does give them it scatters their brains a little bit. They don't like it. They tend to push it away. And of course, grandma or mother or somebody takes a big fingerful of it and shoves it into their mouth, you know, because they know they're going to love it. They don't really love it at all, but you know, it doesn't take too long before they're addicted to. And then, yeah, they love it after that. They want it. And,
If only it was just a cupcake. Usually we have what those, you know, the 1 year old getting the whole cake that they're supposed to mush into. Like it's a big deal these days where they videotape the kid taking its first and it's always a big hand. And it's like, it's crazy, but it's true.
Yeah.
And so we use it as a reward.
They become addicted. But for most, if you notice, if you're around children, that's their first introduction. And by 1 year, it's probably not. They've probably been drinking liquids with a lot of sugar in them. But if you get to a child that hasn't really had much sugar and see their first reaction to it, it's not, oh, wow, that's wonderful, give me more. Generally, their first reaction is to turn away from it and not want any more, but that is often not allowed. They are forced to eat that sugar because everybody knows how much they're going to love it. Right. And as soon as they get addicted to it, well, they do love it. Yeah. It's kind of a sad thing to watch parents addict their children, you know, to an addictive drug that is not only unhealthy, but messes up their cognitive ability, makes them hyper, confuses them, makes them less likely to be, kind of aware of the things that they're doing.
Hmm. Yeah.
Just like adults, and I don't know what the drugs are that are uppers, but, you know, you take things, well, caffeine's an upper, right? Sure. So the people who overdose on caffeine, how do they act? Well, they get hyper. They get to where they can't really think straight anymore. The idea is you take a little of it and that makes you work better because you're a little more, you know, you're wound up and you're going to focus that energy on your job or what it is you have to do. But in general, that's a short lasting effect. What happens is, again, the more of it you take, the more of it you need.
Right.
And pretty soon you're taking so much of it that the effect is to disable you, not to help, you know, not to, you know, enable you. It tends to be more a disabling thing. Mm-hmm. And so it is with sugar. But just the thing is you have to want to change it at the being level. I really want to stop this. I really want to lose weight. You know, I really want to stop smoking. I really want to not get angry every time I visit, my parents or my in-laws or my brother or sister or somebody that maybe you just have a mutual buttons that you push at each other and get each other, you know, upset. You know, if you really want to change those behaviors, you can. because you'll be waiting and you'll say, well, when I get around that person, I'm not going to be annoyed. I'm just going to let it go. And you feel yourself getting annoyed and you just don't do it. Don't go there. And it's not that you just, you know, work that from the intellect. If you just work it from the intellect, well, okay, you'll be more polite than you would have been otherwise. But that's not the point. The point is you have to want to change it. Right. You have to say, I don't want to feel that way. I don't want to be that way. And then you work at it. And it's slow, but over months and years, that reaction you get to that person or to that substance or to whatever it is gets less and less and less. And pretty soon you've risen above it now. No matter what they say or do, it's okay. That's just them. That's just the way they are. And it doesn't trigger any particular reaction out of you, except maybe you feel just a little sad because that is the way they are. And there's really no way you can help them. Right. Too bad. You know, but it's not your, it's not you in that dance with them that's dysfunctional. That's where you're trying to get to, but it's not easy and it's not quick. But if you really want to do it, if you really have an intention, which is where we started, if your intent is to do it, and that's a strong intent that you keep with you, and it's an honest being level intent, you will succeed. Your intent changes reality. You will succeed if you have that intent, and it's not just an intellectual intent. So that's the key, is wanting to, making that intent a being level intent, and then keep putting energy into that intention coming true, and it will come true. It's, you know, so that's not easy, but it's also always works. So if you can do this, you will, you know, get past those sticking points, those things that annoy you or cause you the stress that you have. You can overcome them. So it's not like, well, I'll work hard and maybe I can and maybe I can't. If you really want to, you will succeed. That's the good news. The bad news is it may take you a year or 6 months, and you have to really want to at a deeper level.
Right.
But if you do, you will succeed. And when you succeed, that will be a burden lifted from you, and you'll feel so much better. You'll be happier. You'll be less stressed. Your life will just be better. And the amazing thing is that when you change yourself that way, all of your relationships will suddenly get better. Your connections, your significant other, plus, but you're also your boss and your coworkers and your in-laws, and all your relationships will just improve. It's kind of amazing how that works. You know, you don't have to do really anything to do that other than fix yourself, get rid of your own fears, get rid of your own ego. And if you do that, everybody else will get better too.
Right. I mean, in the last few years, one of the resolutions that have sort of have risen are around wellness. So there is definitely people are aware of, you know, the stress. And I found it interesting, one of the comments about fears, that, you know, that we actually need fear. That was in our last video. And, you know, when we look at our fears, I mean, obviously there are some fears that probably, you know, the basic safety fears are probably the ones that will alert us. And I think that that's not unhealthy. But when we talk about fears, we're not talking about safety fears. We're talking about those fears that sort of block us. But the wellness aspect of the resolutions tend to be rising each year as to where it is on the list of, you know, what we want to change. And I think, you know, as we recognize stress and we recognize our fears, because stress is really just another fear of some sort, you know, what are some of the things that can assist people when that is their goal?
To get rid of those fears.
Well, the fears are just the stress. Like, what if, you know, usually people are looking at, I mean, they may specifically look at fears that they want to let go of, that they notice, you know, maybe abandonment or, feeling separate, because there's usually something around separation or worthiness or something that sort of, you know, intrigues people. I think worthiness is probably one of the ones that are attached with a lot of diet, smoking, alcohol, because I think we tend to feel, you know, we're trying to prove our worth. So we're trying to prove to everybody else, I think, that, you know, we're worthy. So we'll try and stop, you know, we'll try and do the diet. We'll try and do this and that. So I think that kind of that fear definitely influences a lot of people. But when we're looking at wellness, or we're looking at, you know, letting go of some of the stress in our lives, because I think a lot of us seem to have, you know, I mean, there are moments where I know when I'm stressed, and I know so many different things to do when, you know, to get myself out of stress. But I mean, in a normal day, I'm not very stressed. In certain circumstances, I am. But I think, you know, people that have a 9-to-5 job, and, you know, they have all these other people and all these demands and all these things that are around them, you know, what is a way to sort of look at their wellness and create a better alternative to, you know, how they deal with other people, how they handle stress that's thrown at them, because it's a stressful environment or it's a stressful type job.
Stress usually happens because things are not the way we want them to be.
Ah, yes.
I think that's a pretty general, you know, it's a pretty general statement, but I believe that's kind of the root of all stress, is this situation is not the way I want this situation to be, and that causes the stress. Okay. Sure. Well, if we could just accept the situation is the way it is and not have so much need for it to be the way we want it, that would get rid of a whole lot of the stress.
Right.
You see, that would get rid of a whole lot of it. And that would be your first thing to do, would be look at that. Why do I need this to be this way? And you will find there is a fear there. The reason you want it to be this way is because you're afraid if it's not this way, you know, whatever, fill in the blank, whatever follows in there. You want it to be that way. And for the most part, it's going to be because it's not the way you want it. It's going to be personal. It's going to be about you,
right,
your wants, your needs. That's going to be where the stress comes from. So you're stressed at work because you have, you know, too much to do and maybe too little time to do it in. And your fear is that if you don't get it done, you know, you're not going to be in line for the next promotion, or you're not going to be whatever. Okay, so those are the fears. So you have this idea of what you want. You want to go up in the company. You want to get more money. You want to, you know, buy more things. You want to have more power and more you know, ability to control things at the office. And you do that by getting higher and higher positions. And, you know, this is what you're doing. You're trying to climb up this ladder. And if that's your goal, then you're going to create stress for yourself. That's going to be stress, because now it's, you know, you're playing a game, really.
Right.
You're in this game with a whole bunch of other people. And you have to be better than they are. You don't really have to be better. You just have to look better than they do in the eyes of the boss, which means you have to suck up to the boss. You have to, you know, volunteer for all kinds of extra duties not assigned. You have to always come early and stay late. You have to do all the things that make an appearance that you're more deserving than other people. So you're in this competitive game with people. Well, on the other hand, if you're don't have this need to climb up that ladder, and if you say, well, you know, my life isn't so bad, you know, I don't go hungry, my children aren't hungry, you know, my roof doesn't leak, and if it does, I can afford to have it fixed, and life is really good. What's really important here? The amount of status and power I have, or, you know, spending weekends with my family instead of spending weekends working trying to impress my boss? What's really important here? And if you come to the conclusion that what's really important here is the family, then you let that go. And maybe you look for another job. You don't get angry and, you know, go tell the boss you quit. You know, that wouldn't be too wise either. But you maybe look for another job or look for a place where you can be that, you know, you don't have to run on that treadmill. Maybe that's not really the career for you. You might be thinking of some other kind of thing. And if you're stuck with that career, then you need to know how to make the best of it. And if what you decide is, yes, really what I want to do is get into this game and win it. I want to go to the top, and that's what I want to do. Well, then you're going to have to, you know, then the stress actually goes away there too, because now it's a game. It's a game you're playing, and it's a, you know, your strategy and your game, and it's fun in the sense that you are in competition and how are you going to win this competition, and you're not so much stressed out about it as you are engaged in it. You see, and the people that do go up to the top most of the time, that's where they are. That's a game they're playing, and it's a game they enjoy playing. And they don't have the stress, even though they're doing all this stuff. It's not stressful because they're doing it because they want to. I want to stay late every night and come in early because that impresses the boss and it's going to make me go up. So there they are staying an hour late, and they're smiling about it. They're not stressed over it because that's what they want to do. You see? And those people are very hard to compete with if you're trying to, you know, get that position because you're not willing to do that. Well, you have to accept that and say, well, that's part of the way it is. You know, I got to see what's important and what isn't. And if going to the top's the most important thing, well, you know, it's pretty tough if you do have a family and a wife and children, you know, that need you. If you're a bachelor, well, go at it. You know, maybe that's what you want to do with your life. You have a family, you probably have things that are more important than just, you know, getting promoted and more status and more money. So you have to look at life. That's what I mean by being authentic. An authentic person says, who am I? What do I want? What's important? What isn't? And then you start restructuring life to be authentic rather than to be what everybody expects of you. Well, you expect that you're going to, you know, be climbing this ladder because that's what everybody does, you know, when they come to work and we're all competing with each other and, you know, everybody's trying to outdo the other person. And you always have the ability to say, I don't want to play. It's not what I want to do. And maybe you'll never become the vice president. Maybe you'll always just be a division chief or maybe just a section leader or maybe just the worker in the mailroom. But if that's enough and your family and you are really close and caring for each other or whatever, it's a great life. And your life is probably a lot higher quality than the person who's dedicated themselves to being better than everybody else. That life is always a life of constantly on a treadmill, even if running on that treadmill is what makes them happy and what turns them on. They still don't have the things in life that you can have on a very small salary. You know, there's a lot of people who would qualify as being poor who have a very high quality of life because they're in a loving situation. They're caring, they're giving. Everybody's getting by, you know, materially. Not really well, but good enough. But they have a lot of other things that are worth a whole lot more than that material stuff. So it's, you know, that's part of being authentic, being yourself as to what is it that's important to you. And a lot of this stuff that gives us stress, the reason it's stressful is because we do it, but we don't really want to. That's where the stress comes from. Oh, I'm working late, but I hate it. I'd rather be home with my family, but I have to work late. Otherwise, you know, I'm not going up. Well, you have to see that you're conflicted there. You've got this fear of not succeeding, not going up, not being successful, and people won't give you the status because you need status. You need, you know, the respect. You want to be the, you know, the king of the hill, and it's that will feed your ego. That's a fear that of not being successful. Well, you just need to redefine what success is. is that really successful? Or is it being a really good husband and a really good father and, you know, a really good brother or sister or mother or father, whatever it is that successful? You say, what is successful? And once you start to get in line with who you really are, then you feel a lot better. As long as you're in conflict, as long as your fear is making you run this way, but really where you want to be is the other way, then you have this problem. You have all this stress. It's particularly hard for women in a workplace, particularly if they have young children. They've got all the stress because that's not where they want to be. They'd rather be with the children, but then they wouldn't be successful, you see, and independent, and they wouldn't have the status. They'd just be some stay-at-home mom. Ugh, you know, that's like, you know, failure. Well, it depends on where your values are, you know. That, you know, can be a huge success. And that's not an easy job either. That takes an awful lot of work and an awful lot of planning and an awful lot of giving to be a successful, you know, stay-at-home mom. That's not a simple job. That's a tough job. And doing it well takes a lot of focus and something you can be really proud of if you do that well. You know, so it's not, you know, we let the culture tell us that success has to do with how much money you earn, how big a house you live in, you know, how new your car is, and that sort of thing. And that's generally not where success lies at all. Those are the things that often keep us from the success that we really could have. So that's why we start with being authentic and finding out who we are. Why do we do the things we do? What are our fears? You have a fear that you're not going to be seen as successful in the eyes of others. Well, why do you need that? Well, the only reason you could need that is because you feel inadequate and you want to prove to yourself and others that you are somebody, you know, special. And if you just stay at home or if you just, you know, do whatever it is you do and get by, then you wouldn't be successful. You wouldn't have as much stuff. Well, you need to let that go. That's just not useful. If that's what you really want to do, then you can do that too. You know, I'm not saying it's not what you do that's the problem. It's the attitude with which you do it. It's your intention of how you do it. So if you want to climb that ladder, well, go climb the ladder. But if you do, you won't be stressed because you stay late. You'll feel good about staying late because that's what you want. I'm winning this game. I can stay later than anybody, you know, and it makes you smile and feel good inside. It doesn't give you stress. If it gives you stress, you're probably doing something you don't really want to do. So then I'll look at your fear. What's driving you? What's creating the stress? You see, you get rid of the fears and the stress goes away. And I would disagree with the person who thinks that some fear is a good thing. I don't think any fear is a good thing, even those safety fears. Now, you have to be aware, right? You need to be aware. Being aware is not being afraid. Being aware is not being fearful. Okay, one has to not run out in the street without looking because that's stupid to do that. That's why you do it. It's not, well, I don't run out in the street because I'm afraid. No, it doesn't have to do with fear. Fear will always make you do something that's less than what you would do otherwise. If you're just aware, then that will keep you safe. Fear doesn't keep you safe.
Right.
What fear does is keeps you less safe. Okay, that's the problem. Fear is never helpful. Fear is always a problem. No matter what situation you're in, whether it's a safety one or not, the fear isn't helpful. Being aware, being intelligent, being informed, you know, those are things that are very important, but they have nothing to do with fear. Being aware of the things that might bite you.
Right.
That's being intelligent. That's being aware. Being afraid of the things that might bite you, that gets in your way. Now there are things out there that may not bite you at all, but you think they might, so you're afraid of them.
Right.
See? So now every time you get within 10 feet of a big dog, you start to get upset. You get anxiety because that dog could bite you, you see, because you're afraid. Well, if you understand something about dogs because you made yourself aware and knowledgeable, you realize that don't stare them in the eye. You know, don't, you know, there's some things you don't do and some things that you can do that, you know, you don't reach right out and grab them by the ears, you know, to pet them. You turn your back of your hand, you let them sniff you, you know, there's some things you do. But fear makes it such that you don't do those things.
Right.
When you're afraid, now you see the dog, you stare right at it because you're terrified. And you start taking little steps backwards or whatever. What does that do? It draws the dog's attention because the dog sees you as being really weird, you know, something in its environment that isn't right. And now it's looking at you because it thinks that there's something wrong with that person. I better keep an eye on them. You see, you've just created your problem. You see, and then the person says, well, big dogs don't like me. Every time I'm around them, I can just see, you know, they don't like me. Well, it's because your fear is creating the problem. If you just walked up and say, hi, doggy, let him sniff the back of your hand, everything would be fine, but you're too afraid to do that. Therefore, you create a problem. You see, so even the safety fears, the fear is dysfunctional. It's always dysfunctional. Being aware, being intelligent, being informed, that's good, but that's not related to fear.
Right.
That's related to just being intelligent. You look those things up, you inform yourself, because that's the smart thing to do in a life, you know, where there are risks. But in as much as you're afraid, you will almost always do the wrong thing at the wrong time. You will always make whatever the issue is that's a threat to your safety will be worse if you're fearful, then if you're clear-headed and know what to do and how to do it and can act. If you're standing there frozen with your eyes bugged out, you're just not very functional. You see, you have to be able to function in those safety situations where things have gone bad, not be fearful. Fear tends to lock you up. Mm-hmm. You can't move. You can't function. You're not coordinated. You stumble over things, you know, it completely is dysfunctional in all situations. So we just need to get rid of the fear. That's the core problem. And if you have stress, that means you have fear.
Right.
And that stress is probably stress because there's an ego issue.
Yes.
The ego says, I have to do this. I don't want to do this. And now there's a problem, and that creates stress. So the times that people get stressed, sometimes it's social situations. They get stressed when they go to a party or something. Well, because they're afraid, their fear is that it will, you know, people won't like them. People won't think that they're very sociable. You know, they're not going to be funny. They're not going to be entertaining. They're not going to be any of those things. They're just going to kind of stand around and stare at their shoes, and everybody will notice, look at so-and-so, all they do is stand around and stare at their shoes, what's wrong with them? And that's a fear that they're not going to fit in, that they're, you know, somehow it's not going to work out very well for them, and that's their fear. And because of that, they don't want to go. And because they don't go, they don't get invited. And they don't get invited just proves to them that nobody likes them, you see. It was their fear really is the problem. If they could get rid of the fear, everything would just work out fine. But the fear creates the problem most of the time. And even in the safety issues, that's typically the way it is. So you have to find out what those fears are. And you find them out because you look at things like stress. Am I stressed? If you are, there's a fear. There's a problem. There's an ego issue going on. Are you annoyed? Do you get angry? Are you unhappy? Are you struggling all the time? You know, all the negative stuff, all the negative feelings. You know, am I unfulfilled? Am I, depressed? Am I whatever? Whatever it is, if it's a negative word, you know, if it's something negative that when you look at yourself, that goes to ego and fear and belief. And you just need to want to get over it and have the intent to get over it. long enough that you get over it.
Yeah.
That's about as big a secret as there is. You just have to want to get over it enough to focus on it and get over it. There's no pill to take that'll help you get over it. You know, that's why people end up becoming alcoholics, I think. That's the pill you take to get over it. You try to forget about it.
Right.
You try to get rid of that stress by getting drunk instead. Because drunks aren't stressed. But they're even more stressed in their lives once the booze wears off and they have to deal with all the circumstances of their drinking. Now the stress is twice as much. And of course, the way you get rid of twice as much stress is to drink twice as much. And it just keeps into a downward spiral that doesn't work out.
I think that's with all the addictions, the emotional eating, the sugar. I mean, sugar was a reward as a child, right? So we take it when we feel uncomfortable. Whenever there's a situation where we're bored or we're uncomfortable or, you know, we're trying to hide something, we use an addiction. We could talk about addictions. We've done that. We can do that another time. But, I mean, yeah. That really is, you know, the part of the problem.
That is a very big part of that problem.
Yeah.
But that's us not really being
authentic.
We're not really, you know, we're not really being who we need to be. When we get that negative feeling or feeling, oh, you know, a little pushed or a little harried or whatever, instead of going to find a cookie, you know, to make us feel better, we should say, why am I feeling this way? Why do I feel overwhelmed? And it may be because you've just, you know, stayed up all night trying to work on some problem and this and that. And now you've come home and you got all this other stuff to do and it's overwhelming. Okay. It's all right to be overwhelmed when things are overwhelming. You know, well, deal with it the best you can and go take a nap as soon as you get a chance. Right. Or just say, I'm sorry. I just can't, do any more of this. I'm so tired. I can't keep my eyes open. I'm going to take a nap. The rest of you. Deal with the fact that I'm taking a nap, right? You're just going to have to cover and get done whatever it is I would do. And you're going to have to just accept it'll get done however it gets done. And it may not get done at all. And go take your nap. Mm-hmm. You see, that's part of it. You have to just be. Don't let here's what I should do. You know, this is what's expected of me. Get in your way. Sometimes you just got to walk out, take a nap, and let other people cover for you.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll work out however it works out. And most of the time, however it works out, is actually a whole lot better as if you had stayed and, you know, tried to force yourself to do what you really didn't feel like doing. So just be authentic and see how that works. It'll be amazing how well that will actually turn out most of the time. And when it doesn't turn out well, you have to look at that and say, well, should I have done it differently or is it just not my problem?
Right.
It's a learning. You know, you learn by trial and error. You'll learn, you'll try things and see how they work. Make adjustments. Try it again. See how they work. That's why it takes 6 months or a year because it's not something that somebody can tell you how to do. You know, here's the prescription. Do this, this, and this, and then that will happen. Life isn't like that. It's all trial and error. You try something and see how it works. And as long as your intent is to become love,
right.
Eventually, it's all going to work really, really well. But it may take you a year or two to get there. And sometimes you'll have to make changes in your life to get there. And that may be part of the process.
All right. You've been listening to News for the Heart with Lori Houston. And we've been getting to the heart of what matters with Tom Campbell. We've been talking about resolutions, intentions. We've been talking really about, you know, making those lists, but looking at them in a different way so that we can actually come from a being place instead of a doing. Thank you, Tom. I wish everyone a happy new year.
Have a question for Lori and want to be on the next News from the Heart show? Drop us a line via instant feedback at bmajor.org. News from the Heart is brought to you by Intuitive Soul and is produced by Major Radio for Clear Channel's iHeartRadio and bmajor.org.